me clear my throat.
And other references that only like five of you are going to enjoy.
Welcome back to Gaming with Gage and Friends, the podcast where your friends talk about role-playing games. My name is Gage and my friends this week are...
Hi, I'm Tracy.
And I'm Ken.
Today we're going to start off by spotlighting that voice you may have heard that you have not heard before or in a while, Mr. Ken Spencer from Why Not Games. We're also going to have a discussion topic. We're going to talk about when the party goes off the rails. So we've spent a lot of time discussing how to set up the game, how to pitch the game, how to start the game, and now what happens when you start the game and then you start to misfire, false start, go left to center. And then we will end the session, the recording tonight, talking about our Discord spotlight. We're going to talk about Swan Knights, which you've probably heard a lot about, but we're going to talk a little bit about the most recent Swan Knight, some of our plans going forward, and some of the hopeful, you know, cool things that might be on the horizon for us. But first, let's start a conversation by spotlighting Ken. Ken, hey, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to have you back on the show. This is always one of, you know, we talk about, there's been so many people that are like friends of friends that like the friends know, but I don't know them. And it's like, this is a very safe space because I've got Ken, I've got you on one end, I got Tracy on the other, like both previous guests when the show was just me all by myself. So I'm just like in a very comfortable place tonight in my safe space. But Ken, why don't you tell people a little bit about what you do in case they haven't listened to the backlog? Someone recently was like, I listened to all the backlog before I started the new show. And I was like, why? I mean, do that. There's some great stuff back there, but that just seems like so much work. But so for people who don't know who you are, Ken, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Ken Spencer. I am with my wife. I'm a co-owner of Why Not Games. We publish Rocket Age. We pub it and... Rocket Age in both Classic and 5e. Classic is a narrative system based off the old Vortex system. And we publish the Weird series. Play Weird is a series of, for 5e, interesting species and cultures you can play. And then we have One Weird Planets, which is our Starfinder book that we did years ago when Starfinder first started. And Catopia Prime. We like cat games with cats in it quite a bit. And that's my day job. And then my night job is I'm a partner at Frog God Games, where I write Northland Saga and, oh, geez, about what, half of the adventures we put out every year there. And I work on half of the other books. And that's what I'm doing now. I've been in the industry for about 15 years. Worked for Chaosium, Steve Jackson Games, Cubicle 7, Gunmetal Games. I did some work on the third edition of... And the name escapes me suddenly. Their cyberpunk game. I don't know why.
Zero, something zero. Interface Zero.
Interface Zero. Interface Zero 3.0. I did some work on that.
Can't believe I forgot it too.
Exactly. And on the Starfinder version of Interface Zero 2.0 and a whole host of other companies in between.
And which one's your favorite? No, I'm just kidding.
Rocket Age by far is my favorite. The favorite game I've made.
Yeah. What is it about Rocket Age that continues? I mean, you're talking about 15 years spanning a bunch of different companies, properties, getting to play in everyone's sandbox, plus making your own. What is it about Rocket Age that keeps that place in your heart?
I love pulp gaming. In fact, my players have often joked when we've been talking about what's our next campaign going to be. And I've been like, hey, let's do something Roman or maybe ancient Greece. And I'm like, I don't know if we want to do pulp Roman or pulp ancient Greece. But I love pulp gaming, I love sci-fi, and I love the old classic sci-fi serials, and I wanted to see them brought up to more modern sensibilities and with a more modern take on how these worlds would evolve. And I love the era of the 1930s, and I love our solar system and the various weird science facts that I could throw in at the same time turning Mars into a habitable planet and forgetting about gravity.
Yeah, one of the things that I... personally love, I remember reading through some of the Rocket Age source books, is the you give these little story hooks and seeds in all of the different areas, and like in a way that like on another book would be, I don't know, it's so easy to do too much or too little, but you capture the imagination in really interesting ways. You'll be like, here's an NPC, here's three possible stories with that person in this city, in a way that it's just sprinkled all around the Rocket Age universe that I just absolutely adore. But you mentioned Mars. And you're currently doing a Martian-based crowdfunding effort. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
we're running on Indiegogo right now. Arthur's Guide to Martian Life. It's a source book. Arthur Wesley, Dr. Wesley, is a character in Rocket Age, a reoccurring NPC, if you will, who is a xenobiologist, and he travels around the solar system investigating alien life forms, often from the inside of their gullet, and reports back to the scientific community on his various discoveries. So it's the first of our series of monster books, you could call them. They're for Rocket Age Classic and 5e. Rocket Age 5e is compatible with all of your 5e games. So if you want to throw some Martians into Greyhawk, if that's your thing, or Curse of Strahd plus, you know, Martians, that would be a fun thing to do. But so it's his report on, there's 20 new creatures in it, over 20, for your Rocket Age games, ranging from, you know, your basic sort of alien monstrosity with tentacles reaching out of the sand and grabbing people, all the way up to, we have an addendum in the back of Artificial Life of Mars, and we have a section on covering all the major ecosystems of Mars. If you remember the old, and I had these as a kid, they would be like nature documentary books. And you'd flip it open and there'd be this spread of the wetlands of Argentina. And it would be an illustration of all of the common animals there with little numbers. I don't know why I'm gesturing. I'm on a podcast with little numbers showing, you know, this is the three-legged ice, you know, swamp strider. Well, we've done that for the Martian ecosystem. So there's a ton of fluff there and a ton of detail you don't often see in Marsh and monster books. It's not just things that you may eat your characters. It's not just things your characters may have to deal with. It's the background information. It's the what lives in the canals. What's the common animal that runs around the ruins?
Excellent. And as of recording, the campaign is already funded. But as of the episode coming out, it is still live, so people can go back. Is there any interesting things that people should be aware of that might be just around the corner?
Yes. So we have, as far as the campaign goes, if you are brand new to Rocket Age and you think this is a great thing and you want to come check it out, we have included the Rocket Age core book in Classic or 5e and Blood Red Mars, the Mars source book in Classic or 5e as add-ons. So you can swoop in and just get started right away with all of those story hooks. Yeah.
Excellent. I love it so much. I think we were talking about, I don't know if we've started recording already or if it was just before we were talking, but it's just, it's captures the imaginations, Rocket Age specifically, not to like one of your kids more than the other. Like, you know, someone comes over to the house and they're like, your daughter's so smart and your son's there. Rocket Age just captures the imagination in just, it's such an amazing and wonderful way. And I always love having you on to talk about it. But let's move on to our discussion topic for the night. Sure. So we're going to talk about when the party goes off the rails. And this is, in my mind, as we've gone through this season, you've pitched a campaign in a setting to your players. They have said, I would like that game. Depending on which group you're in, you might have been pitching against other GMs. Like, I know Wayne will sometimes, his group will be like, well, there's three GMs and pick between the three of us. So you've won with this idea, and you've sat down and you've done session zero, you've gotten feedback from the players and what they're excited about, and you do all of this, and you sit down for session one, and you're off to the races. It's amazing. You close that first game going, this is going to be fantastic. And then maybe it's session two, maybe it's session three. All of a sudden, you realize that the game that the players are playing isn't the game that you pitched, or the game that they told you about, or the game that you played in that other session. All of a sudden, this adventure through the Caribbean, stopping to different ports to buy miscellaneous spices, has become, we're going to own this bar and we're only going to do island politics. And so what I wanted to kind of talk about among the friends today is kind of some strategies. First of all, where does your heart go out when you hear that? Like, what's your first thought when the players are going completely in a different direction than they originally intended?
I'm trying to think when that's happened to me to the extent that you're talking about, Gage, right? Like what, like how, if players have gone that far afield and said, we know that you pitched this, but we're going to go off and do do this, right? I don't think it's happened often because I can't think of it. But that said, of course, they always go and zig when you think they're going to zag. That's always going to be the case, right? Handle certain problems in ways that you didn't expect, or try to push the boundaries of the setting in ways that they try to solve problems. Like, and my reaction to that most of the time is, will it break anything really important if I let them do this? And if the answer is no, and the answer usually is no, then I let them do it. You know, I let them say, okay, that, you know, even if they don't realize that what they've just done changes the setting for me, usually, if it's a campaign, especially, usually I'll say, okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that that was what the world was like, but now I do. And so I'm smart enough and I'm clever enough that I will adapt to this and make it part of the thing, right? Now, if they do go too far afield, if the answer is yes, that it goes so far that it kind of breaks what my intention for the setting was, or my game intentions were, then I'll either say no, you know, you can't do that. I'll come out of character and say, you know, this is, you know, we're going a little far afield of where we talked about, if I can't do it within the game. Or I'll ask, like, is this the game you want to play? And if so, then I need to kind of retool everything, you know? And that's happened, I think. But again, it's a very, like, my tendency, they're the players. They get to decide these things to a certain boundary. My boundary's pretty big. But that said, I'm very, very meticulous about how I design my settings and how I design my adventures. And so if they go beyond that boundary, then I will say, I'll do something about it. You know, whether it's meta or not, I will do something. That's just me. That's me.
Yeah. And that's, maybe I overstated the question. So I'll really quickly, I mean, I went really far because I wanted to make sure I was being very clear. But I think the more common thing that comes up for me is, like, if you're in session zero and they're like, we want to have interesting, nonviolent resolution in this game, or we want to play map makers in this game. And then you go into the, you know, that second, third session and they're like, what did he say? He said no. Okay, I cut off his hand. What does he say now? And it's like, well, hold on. That's not what she said we were playing, and now I'm confused. That might be an easier example.
For me, it's a case of the first step is to make sure that everyone at the table is on for the change. Because there could be that one person who just doesn't speak up and really, really wind up go map making. And they were in it for the map making. And the party is now torturing people in the bar. And they don't want to be any part of that. Well, that's a time where you just need to try and bring everyone back together and see what direction things need to go. And that includes the GM. If you are the GM and you've signed on and this is your pitch and you're really excited about map making and a hex crawl thing, and you've spent weeks putting together your hex crawl, and they decide they never want to leave hex one, then there's a disconnect there. And you have to make sure, are you still going to have fun doing this? Because if the GM stops having fun, the entire game's going to fall apart. But for the most part, everyone's on board. And my players want to go off on some wild tangent. That's who they are. That's what they do normally. Our last campaign started off as fantasy pirates, and because of the direction they wanted to go into, they started plane hopping their ship throughout time and space, and it became Pirate Doctor Who. And that's okay. We had a good time. And they picked up a crew of Soviet resistance fighters and anthropomorphic bears and other folks along the way. So when it came time for the final battle at the end of the campaign, it got wild and crazy and we had a good time. But everyone was on board. That was the key. Everyone was on board. All it took was one person to throw the brake and be like, hey, I signed on to sail the seas and shoot elves. I did not sign up for punching Nazis on Mars.
I don't know. I think you can sign up for that.
I think that I really do enjoy, because I tend to run shorter campaigns. So first of all, I tend to design my own stuff, right? So if I'm going to run Savage Star Trek or whatever, I've got a sort of curated sort of 4 to 5 session thing in mind. So it's not necessarily on the rails, but it's definitely I've got a plan here. And I make it clear what that plan is in session zero, you know, when you say this is when I pitch the campaign, say this is what it is. And everybody's sort of on board for that. But there's a different way of GMing. And I've done it before when I was in development for my setting Han Cluster, where I was just like, I don't know what this is yet. And here I'm going to start you in this city and we're going to do this thing or whatever. And then we'll see what you do. And then I will adapt and change and be completely improvisational between sessions to figure out what happens next. And that's a completely valid and awesome way to run a campaign. It's not the only way, but it's an awesome way. And I think it depends on the kind of GM you are, the kind of game you want to run, and what you're looking for, what you're looking to get out of it. Like Ken said, it's really important the GM is on board for whatever happens, because if they're not, it all goes downhill real quick.
You don't want to be sitting down to play King Arthur Pendragon and expecting Knights of the Round Table and have your players turn to you and go, but what if we killed Arthur? Because at that point, okay, this is an entirely different set of parameters and an entirely different feel for the game. If I know that ahead of time as the GM, then we have the tyrant Arthur and he must fall. And I could set up the setting and set up the adventures at the start so that is where we're going.
Yeah. Yep. What do you think, Gage?
I think a lot of things. I think one, Tracy, I think you and I probably run a very similar style of campaign. We've only gotten to do like one shot bits together, but I have a feeling it's probably pretty similar, because I have been fairly criticized, I think more behind the scenes in production conversations about the show, of saying if you did shorter campaigns and a better session zero, you wouldn't have any of these problems, right? That's like, it's almost become like a joke answer. But one thing I kind of wanted to address is this thing of like, as a GM, this is something I'm still working on personally, I think, because if I have a game with 4 players and the 4 players say, we want to go left, how do you feel about that? Even if I don't want to go left, I have a hard time saying that, because it just feels different being that person. And you don't want them to go, well, Gage doesn't like it, so let's not force Gage to do it. And we'll, you know, there's almost that thing of like, quote unquote, good GMs. Like we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, like, oh, you're saying this kind, sometimes we say this kind of gaming, but what we really mean is like, you know, good gaming or good game mastering. And it's like, so the good game master says yes and goes off with the players.
Don't get me started. Just
big head, no one can see, but big head shakes going on from everyone here. But I don't know. I tend to be, Chris isn't here tonight, so I will say, like, against the interest of verisimilitude, which I know he would be advocating for, I also tend to just stop and say, hey, we talked about this, you're doing that, is that what you want? And kind of like we're all saying here, it's like, if that's what you want, then let's come back next week and let's do that. But one thing that I find really interesting, when we were talking about session zeros, and again in the Discord, is the idea that session zero is a whole bunch of, oh, this is what I think I want, you know, and then session 1, 2, and 3, you start to see what you actually want as a player. Mm-hmm. So I also just like this idea of constantly, either constantly or even scheduled. You know, I joke about the session 3.5, where you have another time where you sit and talk about expectations and stuff like that, because I think it's so, it's not always, hey, we were going to be merchants and now we want to buy a bar, but this like creeping move away from what people thought they want, either towards old habits or just, you know, setting expectations that the players had that weren't vocalized before. It's just so common.
Yeah, I think like a lot of times, you know, a session zero can't do everything. So what players say they want, or however you're getting that information out of them, right? A lot of times that's going to change as things go. And it tends to be a subtle shift. It tends to be, well, I was kind of hoping that we would be able to have sort of be able to play a relationship game where we have NPCs that we care about and we come back to that that we develop our relationship with or whatever. And then all of a sudden, something changes and you're off on a alien planet and you're not around your home base anymore. And you don't get to have that anymore. Now it's not what that, it's not that anymore. It's something else. It's fun, but it's not exactly what you signed on for. And maybe you go with it as a player. Maybe you say something and say, oh man, I wish we would get back to something so that I could be like, you know, feel that sense of connection with my community, right? And maybe the GM finds a way to bring you back. You know, I mean, like that's a dynamic and shifting situation. And that's mostly what happens in my groups. I generally don't have to come out of character and break verisimilitude and do all that kind of stuff. But we do talk outside of game. And like, I get the sense of what the players are feeling. And then I sort of go with it, you know. So that's just me, I think.
One of the things that I do a lot before Session Zero is I put out polls. Because we're all on my group is all on the same Facebook channel, chat channel. So we put up polls. You know, what do we want to have? What do you want the main villains to be? What do you want the main arcs to be? So we resolve some of these issues ahead of time. It doesn't mean they're not going to crop up three sessions in and they're suddenly go, you know what? I don't want to do Planet of the Week. I want to do this planet from now on. And then you've got to scramble and figure out a way to make that work. But polling your players directly before the game, after the game, in between games is a good way to do it so that you don't break the flow of the actual game session. And you only have so many hours to play. We don't want to spend too much of that time stopping, putting a pin in everything, and then discussing something that can be taken care of through another format.
Whoa, for sure. For sure.
Only so many hours in a session. Very accurate. All right, let's move on to our Discord spotlight. So for those of you who are listening, you know we love the Discord because we won't stop talking about it. And I won't. I'm just going to keep talking about it. It's a super cool place filled with super cool people doing super cool things. And tonight we're specifically going to talk about our Swan Nights, which is our Savage Worlds Adventures Night, which if you haven't heard before, they take place Monday nights, usually at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. That's flexible. I just want to throw that out there because I've had some people be like, but I live in Alaska. And it's like, well, then just tell people you're starting later. It's okay. But the stock starting time is 8:30 p.m. And one of the very cool things about this is, for me at least, is the ability to run one-shots in settings that I'm never going to play a campaign of. And so I got to, last night as of recording, do Weird Wars. And if you're a listener who's in the Discord, then you can start to piece together and you can find out exactly when this was recorded. But I got to do a Weird Wars one shot, and Weird Wars is one of those Savage World settings where, as someone who prefers to GM over play, I don't want to run it as a campaign. I have zero interest in running it. I have been trying to get other people to run campaigns of Weird Wars for years at this point. But for a one shot, it was super fun. And we got to like have all of the moments. We got to have the sergeant who was like, come with me, boys, who got like blown up right away. And that was played by my best friend whose second character almost died that night. And, we did the adventure. I don't remember the name right now, but it's one of the free one sheets with the splitter spinning or whatever, the shrapnel spiders. And it's utterly terrifying and horrifying. And they like blow up into them and then reassemble themselves. It's fantastic. But it was just the perfect example of being like, hey, everyone knows what they're signing up for. So I'm not going to put, you know, and Tracy, I know we've talked about this. I don't have to put a huge amount of effort into this game. I'm going to run a one sheet. It's going to be for this setting. And we already know what the day and time is. So if you want to come, you know what you're signing up for. And everyone did. And we had an absolute blast.
Awesome. I've never played in a Weird Wars game. I Weird Wars is one of those, I think, maybe like you, Gage, where I'm like, it's not for me. And partially because the historical, you know, sort of parameters of it, like, preclude some of the characters that I would want to play, right? So I would play it. I would absolutely play a one shot of it, absolutely. But I tend not to run it or be interested in any kind of long term game of it. But yeah, it's all awesome to have it be able to be played as a one shot.
We actually did a Weird Wars campaign over the quarantine, over throughout COVID.
Which war?
We did World War II Pacific Theater, and we broke it into it became almost two games at the same time. We had the Weird War with the horrors and the war and Guadalcanal and you know, a lot of combat, a lot of investigation, a lot of horror. But we also did a side game, since we were doing it on Discord, we did a side game of people's exchanging letters back and forth to their home.
Oh, that's so
cool. So the character, the players who really wanted more of a social game got into that. So they were sending letters. So they, everyone write up letters and then drop them in a channel for the GM. And then the GM would read them and then private message your letters back when mail call happened.
Cool.
So we did that. And it was nice. It added an extra dimension to characters who could have ended up being very one dimensional for some of them.
That's cool. That's a cool idea.
That's, for me, I probably talked about this before. I was going to say hints on what I'm running next, but I have this idea for a military campaign. It's going to be military fantasy. But one of the things I'm obsessed with is I'm going to be doing a lot of flashbacks, kind of like the military, again, stealing heavily from military movies for that same thing, right? If the session is going to be a lot of tactics and a lot of, ROLL playing, right? How do you humanize these characters and give them connections? But that's just one of the things I love about Swan. It's a great opportunity to get in there and try some stuff. Tracy, obviously, you've run some Swan games, and there's going to be at some point a Pine Box Middle School game that I'm very excited about. I'm super pumped about that. Ken, if you ever want to come run something, it has to be Savage Worlds and it has to be on Monday.
I would love to. I may just come along and that's here.
And in the Discord, yeah. When we get done recording, I can even point out the channels to you. I don't.
Sure. Yeah, I would love to do. I'd love to sit in on some. I never get to play. I'm the constant GM.
Excellent. And we also have, so it's just for people who are listening, who are thinking about jumping in, we have, we just had one more creator who is 80% of the way, I won't say their name because I don't want to push them over. But they're 80% of the way there coming in to run a setting that they've been developing. And we just had JM from Pinnacle, who's going to be the community manager over at Savage Universe, who is in there, who has promised to run a game. That was a fun one. I sent an email to Chris. I was like, hey, Chris Landauer. And I was like, hey, we'd love to have some people in. What do you think? And he's like, I will volunteer JM. And JM was like, yeah, awesome. Sign me up. Let's do it. So that was very, very cool. Savage Universe is like going to launch in like 30 minutes from right now when we're recording. So we're very excited. I mean, Tracy, do you know anything about Savage Universe that not everyone else knows?
I really don't. I know they've been working on it, and they were like this morning, they were talking about what art they wanted to put there. And so, but I don't know. I'm interested in your art to see what they do, because I don't really know. I haven't been talking to JM.
Well, the fun thing is, like, we record so far in advance that in this exact moment, everyone listening knows more about it than we do talking right now, which is always fun. So, yeah, if you want to play in a Swan game, if you want to run a Swan game, it's not a huge process. So this is something that we've had some new people jumping in and running games. You just come in. We have a shared Google Sheet. It's super easy to find. And if you have questions about it, the community is there to help you as well. You can sign up to run, sign up to play very, very easily. And I guess the rule is don't be a jerk. Follow all the server guidelines. I don't know. I don't know if we're just like exploding on our die roll, but we have had zero. I don't want to jinx it. Like, we've had zero community issues. And Swan has been nothing but a treat. So if you want to come in and play, play some Savage Worlds, play some settings you haven't played. If you haven't really played Savage Worlds at all, we have people who are coming in that are completely new. Maybe it's their first, maybe it's their second time playing. We just had a friend of mine who's played a couple of times. He was in my Weird Wars game last night, but he's getting ready to run his first Savage Worlds campaign, which is super exciting. Join us. But he signed up for a couple of games because it's just like, well, let me remember how these rules work before I have to take a party of complete Savage Worlds newbies through a campaign. So you can find that in the Discord server. If you haven't joined the Discord server before, you just got to jump in there and take that Swan role, and you'll get access to all those Swan channels. that is all the time we have for tonight. So I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank all of the people who have jumped in and run Swan Games before. Like, you keep Swan going, you make Swan possible. So we always appreciate that. Tracy, Ken, I want to thank you guys for being here. Thank you for being my friends. And we'll see y'all next week.